Welcome. Please state your name and your position.
My name is Roy Peter Clark, and for the last 40 years, I've been employed by the Poynter Institute, which is a school for journalists, which owns the Times Publishing Company. And I officially retired as a full-time employee, but I still have my office there. I still write and teach there and enjoy the company of my colleagues.
How many years have you been in St. Pete?
I arrived in 1977. So when I first came, I started as a writing teacher, writing coach at the St. Petersburg Times, and then moved over to the Poynter Institute after Nelson Poynter died unexpectedly. And they had to figure out how to create this school that he imagined. He financed it, but didn't leave any instructions as to what we should teach and how we should teach it. So in a little small storefront, which is still here in town at 556 Central Avenue, right next to the Emerald Bar, I worked there for 6 years of my career. So this is really kind of a 40th anniversary of a variety of different things. And boy, a lot has changed in journalism, in media, and in the city of St. Petersburg.
What organizations are you involved in?
In addition to sort of Poynter and the Times, I write for a variety of different news organizations. I've written for CNN.com. I've been doing some work recently with The Undefeated, which is a website of ESPN, which focuses on the collision of sports, journalism, and American culture. And, you know, I have really, I would say, kind of good relationships with a variety of institutions in town, including the Pinellas County Schools, University of South Florida, and St. Pete. My three daughters and my wife all graduated from what used to be known as SPJC, Junior College, and St. Pete College. The previous president of the college was named Bill Law, and he and I were in the same high school class in 1966 on Long Island. So I paid a lot of attention to what he was doing and the leadership that he attended. So listen, when you're in a place for 40 years, by natural affinity, you wind up connecting with various institutions. I like to do it sort of proactively. And bookstores, coffee shops, now the microbreweries. Listen, anywhere people want to gather and tell stories, you know, is a place that I'm attracted to.
What gets you out of bed every day?
Well, when I saw that that was going to be a question, I said the honest answer at the age of 70 is the need to pee. But I would say I'm driven both personally and professionally by a pretty big ambition. And I've stated it in the books I've written and the teaching I do. And that is that I want to help make America a nation of writers. Now, before you can do that in America, I guess you need to make Florida a state of writers and you need to make St. Pete a city of writers. So every day, I'm waiting to be surprised by the opportunity to kind of fulfill that mission and purpose. And personally, I'm motivated by the desire to learn something new about the craft of writing, reading, journalism, language, you know, every day. And I don't know, day's still young. We'll see what happens today.
Why St. Pete?
Well, in 1977, I was teaching English and writing at a small campus in Montgomery, Alabama. And I had written some journalism pieces. I'm a New Yorker, and 74, you know, I was looking for a job out of graduate school, had a new PhD. I applied to 100 schools. Back in the day, by the way, if you apply to 100 colleges, right, you needed to type out 100 letters. So I got 4 interviews, and I got 1 job offer in Alabama. And I got really interested in the South at the time after the civil rights movement. Jimmy Carter had emerged as a presidential candidate. The South was starting to look a little bit more open and progressive. People talked about a new South. And I wrote stories about that. And when I did, they wound up in the New York Times. They wound up in newspapers, you know, around the country. And that's what sort of sparked the journalism fire for me. So in order to learn about journalism, I wanted an immersive experience. You know how people like, they want to learn Spanish, so they go someplace for a year or whatever. They come back with greater fluency. So because of the work I was doing, I was invited by Gene Patterson, who was the editor of the St. Petersburg Times, and one of the most famous editors in America because of his work at the Atlanta Constitution during the Civil Rights era. He was a progressive white editor, very courageous, won the Pulitzer Prize, very inspiring man. And he was the president of the American Society of Newspaper Editors in 1977, and he wanted to try an experiment. Could you improve the quality of writing at an American newspaper by bringing in somebody from the outside who doesn't know any of the restricting conventions of the journalism craft, but who is appreciative of good language use and powerful storytelling? So I was 29 years old, so he invited me to come in for a year. And I have to say, there wasn't much in St. Petersburg in 1977. I made this case the other day. There was the newspaper, which was very good. And there was the weather, which was really good for half the year. And there was the sea. Downtown was a mess. You know, the Vinoy was a ruin. It was really hard for me to see my sort of staying here and living here. But the work was compelling. And my third daughter, Lauren, was born here at Bayfront Center. And so, you know, my wife and I and three daughters, we began to develop our family life. And of course, that is powerful and compelling, and it connects you with institutions like Lakewood High School and girls' soccer, and you have neighbors. And we decided to stay. And we made a really interesting decision back then. And we decided to stay, and we were looking for a house, our first house. Many people who we talked to, not everybody, but many people said, listen, whatever you want to do, don't live on the south side of St. Petersburg. In retrospect, those were inspired by kind of sort of racial fears and things like that. You don't want to go down there. Kind of a generic description of the city south of Central Avenue. And when we looked around, we realized that we could buy a house down in Pinellas Point for about $45,000, when the same house north of Central Avenue was essentially selling for like $75,000. We said, let's move down there. We wound up moving into one of the most interesting, racially diverse parts of the city, and maybe one of the most racially diverse and tolerant places in America. And that has been a tremendous blessing, tremendous blessing. It's helped me understand not just the city, but the country in all kinds of powerful ways.
What is one habit that you keep?
I guess for the last 8 years, 7 or 8 years, it's been coffee in the morning at a restaurant called The Banyan. Originally on 9th Street, on MLK, and then a second one on Central Avenue attached to the Morian Center, enjoying the hospitality of Erica Allams and her staff, and enjoying the kind of really, I guess, unintended benefit of, it feels like a kind of a relaxed, unofficial city hall or something like that. I mean, I met you there. Many of the people now who I work closely with, if I didn't meet them at the Banyan, I had my most serious conversations with them. And usually, it's not by a planned meeting. Who's there today? You know, I was sitting at the coffee bar, and a woman sat next to me and said, you look familiar to me. And I said, well, you kind of look familiar too. And we thought, and it was Darden Rice, city council member. I never met her in person before. I wound up pitching this idea for the city just based on that meeting. So yeah, there are a lot of really good such places in the city, but that's the one that's special to me and some of the writers that I hang out with.
Who are some people that influence you?
Gene Patterson, who hired me, who taught me about the relationship between journalism and democracy and social justice. In other words, gave me not just a craft, but a purpose for the craft. Don Murray, who was from New Hampshire, University of New Hampshire, and was, I think, the most influential writing coach in America, spent a lot of time at Poynter in St. Petersburg. I would say the two of them became mentors for me. They were really interesting because they were so different in some ways. One was a Northerner, one was a Southerner. But they both World War II veterans, you know, experienced things in their youth that drove their careers and interests and imaginations. They both won the Pulitzer Prize for editorial writing, you know, at different times. Murray in the 50s and Patterson in the 60s. On a daily basis, you know, I never know. Get back to the Banyan, you know, like Bob Devin Jones inspires me with what he's done in helping to as a kind of a unofficial cultural czar of the city. Tom French, who won a Pulitzer Prize for feature writing in 1998 at the St. Pete Times, now teaches at Indiana University. And he and I met him when he was 21 years old and was essentially his first job. He came to the Times. And we've had countless conversations about writing, storytelling, the craft, family, women, politics, government, America, Game of Thrones. And now, fortunately, even when your friend lives like 1,000 miles away, it's a lot easier to connect with that person. There are many, many others fall into the same category.
What is one piece of insight, a book, methodology, or practice that you would share with our readers?
When I was going to school, elementary school, middle school, I think this is still true, what I'm about to say, that there was the absolute expectation that you would learn to be an effective reader. Not just me, because I could read well, but the other dozens of kids in the class, right? If anybody decided to opt out of reading, which they could, maybe you can do it now more than ever in certain ways. But if you did that, people knew it was going to affect your education, it was going to affect your professional life. And if you want to have one, your life as a citizen or as a resident in a community, right? But it's interesting. So that's one literate behavior, reading. One of the other literate behaviors, writing, is something that was not really still not thought of as a social literacy, as something that everybody should do. What happened, what teachers did is when they saw a kid with writing talent, they would identify him, and I might have been one of them, and said, you know what, Joe? You know, you could be a writer. And that was a great compliment, and it inspired many people to pursue careers in that area. But what about the other 29 kids in the classroom? Can't they be members of the club too, even if they're not going to do it professionally? This gets back to thinking of a nation of writers. And we have a nation of texters. We have a nation of bloggers and tweeters and Facebook updaters or posters, right? And people don't think about that as writing. But I treat the writing of those elements, even if I'm moving fast, with as much care and attention. And look, recent history proves to us that you can write a tweet and either get yourself in trouble or get elected to a high office or, you know, change somebody's life for the better or worse. So that's one of the ways in which that insight has motivated me to continue to want to work with writers from cradle to grave every day.
What is one thing you wish you knew about your work 3 years ago?
So on New Year's Eve, 2016, I officially retired as a salaried employee of the Poynter Institute and signed a contract to keep my office there and to do additional work, teaching and writing on a contract basis. I was the vice president and senior scholar. I'm recognized now as sort of the senior scholar emeritus, which is not a happy phrase for me. But let me say that I had absolutely no idea how busy I would be in retirement. I'm busier now than I was. Don't you think that many people of a certain age, when they imagine retirement, it involves achieving escape velocity, you know, from a set of daily activities and routines. But if you're involved in your community, if you're a teacher who continues to have a lot of people coming to you in order to get better at their craft, if you're an author with a book contract, the sixth one in 12 years, there's a lot to do. There's also a lot to learn. I suppose there are classes in how to retire. Looking back, you know, I wish someone had just sort of recommended a good one, because as everybody knows, things change. Many things change in your daily life, from how you pay for medical care, how taxes work in a new kind of revenue environment, and how you create essentially a new routine to replace the old one. The best thing about my version of retirement is the absence of meetings. Now, I know meetings are important, but let me just say is that those routine meetings are no longer on my schedule. Makes room for some other things.
What's next?
So on Tuesday, I'm going to give a little presentation at the new James Museum of Western Art. And I'm going to be sort of a little social evening in which members of the community are invited to come in and to reflect on a particular piece of art that speaks to them in a particular way. I don't think I've ever given a talk in a museum before. That came from an invitation from Julie Mattis, who is one of the people at the museum who works in their sort of marketing and education wing. How did I meet Julie? I met her at the Banyan. We got talking and she told me about her new job and I started to reflect. So I guess I have a young colleague named Andrew DeLong. And when I announced my retirement, he came in to me and had a nice sort of meaning of life conversation. And he was encouraging me and he said, "I can't wait to hear about the phone call." And I said, "What's that? Who we talked to?" No, he says, "I believe that sometime, you know, after you leave Poynter, that you're going to get a phone call. And I don't know what it is, and you don't know what it is. But when it comes, it's going to be really interesting and exciting and open a doorway to a new expression of your life and career." I found that to be like wonderfully encouraging and exciting. So thank you, Andrew.
Wonderful. Thank you.